looking at the family. We've looked at mom and dad. We've looked at husband and wife. Now we're looking at the children. And now we're going to look at from the aspect of the parent to the child. What do we owe our children? And in many ways, it may seem superfluous now, given that you have raised your children and they have gone. But remember, you're still a wellspring of knowledge to those in your family that are still raising children or one day will raise children. So it's good to keep sharp on these things. So what we're looking at now, children need and should have time with their parents. We've talked about that a little bit, where they should have special times with each parent and special times with the entire family together. And folks, I have never read anything that says that that time should stop. Just because they've moved on and moved out of the house and maybe even have children of their own, you should still stop and spend time with them. Distance and time sneak up on you, don't they? That they really get to you. Many of you were thinking, I can't remember who was talking about it last night. I think we were talking about the Gunnels back there. We were talking about you guys, sorry. But how quickly it seems that people grow up. One minute you are a kid, then you have kids, and then those kids are adults, and it happens fast, right? So that special time with your grown children, and even as they've gone off and they've started families of their own, it's still important to take that time and be with them. Now, of course, not in an intrusive or controlling way, but in a, hey, do you have time to have lunch with dad this week? Hey, maybe sometime next month we can take a fishing trip or we could take a road trip. We go shopping, whatever it is y'all get into, to be able to do that together. Again, that connectivity is very valuable. It's very important, especially when they're younger, to develop that. Otherwise, you know, if we were to sit there and try to, I don't know, if I were to sit there and try to sit down with my grandma now, how awkward that would be. My grandma and I, we don't spend a lot of time together. So if she calls me up and says, Matt, I'd like you to come on by. We're going to have a cup of tea or something because she's a tea drinker. And I'd be like, all right, grandma. I'd be for it. But it wouldn't be as comfortable as it would be as if it started earlier off in my life. And that's what's valuable to us. We want to start them off young with understanding that they've got your ear and they've got your heart. Many a times we teach the lesson that you have my heart, but we don't always stick the lesson that you also have my ear and I care and I'm hearing what you have to say. So they should have that special time. And there's lots of different things you can do. You don't necessarily have to go do something. For us, each kid has their own little hobby. I spend some time attempting their hobbies. I'm not really good at it. Right now, they've gotten into video games. One thing I've always been horrible at is video games, but you try. Why? Because that's special time. They'll remember those things where mom and dad took an interest in what I have. They felt heard. They felt the respect. Why? Because I was showing them that respect. Parents should lead their children in such a way that in time they can win that one to Christ. And again, that's where our integrity comes in. Where mom and dad can't be sitting there telling me about sin if I can see theirs clearly. It's not right for them to talk about how much God means to them when they say all this about it. I never see them reading the Bible, and I never see the relationship there, right? My boys, they can see the relationship that I have with my friends. They can see my relationship that I have with people in the family. They see that very plainly. They should be able to also just as plainly see my relationship with God. They should see how that affects and impacts my life. Not that I'm putting on a show, but that I'm so focused on it that it becomes obvious. Again, because I love the Lord, how do I show that best? By loving the Lord and serving Him. They'll catch up on that. They'll see that, you know, Dad's having a rough week, so what did he do? Well, I caught him several times this morning. I got up. Dad was already praying. Mom right now, she's not feeling so well, so every time we've been praying for her, and this is what we've done. So we put that effort in, not to, again, to put on the show, but we keep our integrity, understanding that one day will translate out to what the kids understand about God. Remember, more is caught than taught. If I've got a double standard in the home, they're going to pick up on that double standard, and it won't make sense to them later when you try to tell them how valuable God is to you. All right, so we want to keep the walk straight. All of the above spell time and work, and that's what it takes. And if I had to add another word to that, it would be consistency. Work on consistency in your life. And again, we're not just talking about young children. Your adult children will see you, and as those things matter to you, and as you show your relationship with God, that's going to speak to them as well. So time, work, consistency. Many modern-day parents are too lazy or selfish to give the time and put in the consistent effort necessary to raise godly children. They want instant results, but they'd almost be happy to let others do it for them. And we got a lot of that down at Flat Rock when we would have kids come in on the van routes. We would go and we'd pick them up. We were a glorified daycare center. Oftentimes, and it's sad, this really broke my heart when it started, but it really came to a crescendo at some point where we would go to take kids home and the parents wouldn't be there. And we're not talking, 12, 13, 14. We're talking 6, 7, 8. We're talking my kids' age. We show up on the bus. There's no one to let the kids in. And then we got a one situation where the kid, he was 5 or 6 years old, no older than Caspian. It's okay. I have the key. And now I'm sitting there in a position going, do I let this child go into this house by themselves at this age? Not only what could happen to this child, but on the very bottom of the spectrum, what could potentially happen to me if something happens to this child? So I would never, it was very sad, but many people are like, we'll throw them off to the church and church will fix them. We'll throw them off to the Sunday school and the Sunday school will fix them. Well, that's just as ignorant as saying that the school should be responsible for the full education of your child. Mom and Dad, we got to step in and we've got to make sure that the bases are being covered. Remember, there was a time when you would get in trouble at school for your grades being lowered. And what would happen? Your parents would sit there and who would they hold responsible? You. Nowadays, parents, they don't think it that way. They look at the teacher and they say, teacher, what are you doing wrong? As opposed to sitting there and investing time in your kids' schoolwork and investing time in their development, both academically and spiritually, we're more, well, how come the system isn't working well for me? Remember, the system is there as a help. It is not there to take your place. As parents, that's the commitment that we make when we have kids. Determine here and now is what our lesson says. Determine here and now that you will follow God's pattern and dedicate yourself to its consistent application while you have children in the home. All right, and what we also need to do, go ahead, let's go to Proverbs 22, verse 15. Proverbs 22, 15. And it says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Now, I've known a lot of people that focus on the second part of the verse, right? But the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. But we don't understand the full weight of foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Now, I could pick on my kids, but I won't. I'm going to pick on you when you were a kid. Think of the wildest and craziest thing you did as a child. And I'm going to ask you this question. Why'd you do it? I think I've told stories about my childhood before. I took a knife and I was pulling off some moss from a tree because I thought it would look real cool. So I pulled it off and instead of cleaning the knife the way you're supposed to, I used my hand and I put the sharp end and right there on Thanksgiving Day, opened up a finger right there in the house. I had to go to the emergency room on Thanksgiving Day, right? And you sit there, and I remember my mom looking at me, and she goes, Matt, why? And you know what I did? I looked at her, and I spouted that wisdom that is in the heart of every child.
I don't know.
Well, you know you're not supposed to do that. You know that was dumb. We've talked to you about this. You know it was sharp. Why'd you do that?
I don't know.
And there was no answer. And you want to know why? When you ask a child, why did you do that? They look at you and go,
I don't know.
Because in their heart, they don't know. Why? Because we are all fools as children. And very seldom do we ever grow out of it. Very seldom have I met a person who's grown up and they're filled with wisdom. Right? That's not an insult. That's true. We all maintain that foolishness to some extent. We've all been there where we walk into a room and we say, I was going to do this. Or you look back at something you did and you said, why would I do that? I would never do that. And as much as we want to sit there and try to overthink that, we have to understand that step number one, when I'm dealing with a child, is in their heart is, one, a lack of knowledge, but two, an abundance of chaos. Right? They're going to get driven to do things. I heard a preacher one time give, he was a pastor that I had down in Cincinnati. He told a story about how his parents gave him a coat rack, and the coat rack looked like a clown, and it had a little pegboard on it. And he put it up, and he put his little coat on there, and it looked like a clown. He said he remembered telling the story about how he ripped the head off of the clown, turned it around to where that coat hook was there, and started pushing its face into the drywall, and just shredded that drywall. He goes, to this day, I don't know what possessed me. If it was me, he goes, I don't know what happened. He goes, I just remember going nuts, tearing up this wall, and my parents looking at me going, why would you do that? And he sat there and went, I really don't know, Mom and Dad. Something came over me, the madness. And that's what's in each and every one of their hearts. So we have to understand that. Number one, I have to plan for that. When I see it, don't lose your mind. And number two, plan for this. Right, I have a plan. We set things up. Right now, homeschooling with the kids, especially for the more creative of them, it can be a challenge. Whereas Gideon is real quick to find like things to wrestle with. Like I'll come home and he'll have like a big Nerf mace hidden somewhere and he'll come get me with it. Right, one of them is just like that, but with toys. So you'll remove everything from the workspace. We're sitting down, we're doing this, we've got headphones so we can focus on our workspace. We'll get up and we'll have breaks so we can concentrate better. And then you'll look over and having never left the chair, having completely survived the entire body search we just gave him, he'll have a toy for whatever reason. Now we can say that we can lose our mind at that, but that's in the heart of every child to do. So when I'm planning for things, how can I best help them get past these moments? And also, how can I be more patient during them? So I'm planning for it because I know it's there, but also I'm not going to lose my mind when I see it. A lot of people sit there and say, my kid did this, what's wrong with them? Answer most of the times is very simple. They're sinners. Now, there are cases where there are some extreme problems within a child. Now, that's a completely different thing. We're talking the normal, everyday, day-to-day, I threw jelly up against the wall kind of behaviors where you look at them and you say, why? And they look at you and say, I don't know. It just, I was there, the jelly was in my hand, next thing you know, it's in the wall, right? And if anything, you look at babies. Babies are pure 110% self-will. Everything that comes to their mind, they're going to do. Let me get this. I'm going to take this. I'm going to put this in my mouth. Last night, my dear sweet little girl, she reached into, I had a little guacamole and bean dip, put her hands into it, squished it in her fingers, a little bit on her mouth, a whole lot on the table. Why? She doesn't know. I don't know. Let's not stress about that. Right? The important thing to realize is, Dad, you put that a little bit further away from her or get quicker with the spoon. That's all we can really do with that, is because in the heart of every child is foolishness. Now we see the second part of that, where yes, there is the correction part. If I'm entirely too sympathetic to it, they'll never grow out of it. They'll grow up with anxiety issues. They'll grow up with gross behavioral issues. There has to be some kind of a correction. Now the Bible here specifically talks about the rod. But that correction has to have a little bit more complexity than just I beat it out of them, right? So let's take my illustration, my very innocent illustration of Melody reaching down and she grabs the bean dip and the guacamole. Well, at that stage, no, no, and I move it, right? Now, if it's Xander doing that, that's a different thing, right? I just use it because he's older and he's wiser, he's smarter, he knows that I'm not supposed to do that. Right? Well, at that particular point, that's a completely different thing at his age and at his understanding. That would be a stern talking to. He's definitely going to end up cleaning this up. And we may potentially have to address a spanking on that matter. But we have to be smart about this approach and not just do a one-size-fits-all. All right, well, if I'm going to give Xander 3 swats with the belt, I'm going to give Melody 3 swats with the belt. You'd come after me for that. Right? And also we want to understand that punishment is not us exercising anger. Spanking should never be about me relieving my anger. I love my mom, but that is how she got rid of the anger. All right, and she'll tell you that today. If I did something wrong and we smart mouthed her, or we did something sufficiently bad to irritate her, whatever was around her was what we got spanked with. Right? And that's we learned real quick to hide the Matchbox race, the Hot Wheels race car tracks, those orange ones, those little death sticks. We hid those real fast. There was just some toys we stopped asking for Christmas just based off of whether or not we thought we could get hit by it. Right? But all joking aside with that, you know, we that's not a time for me to exercise my anger. I remember just recently I had a situation where I said, listen, you need a timeout. And it wasn't because they needed a timeout. It was because Daddy needed a timeout because I'm not going to handle this properly. All right, I won't tell you who it was. I won't tell you what they did. But you need a timeout because Daddy needs a timeout to get himself together so I can properly parent you instead of be angry at you. So we need to keep that in mind, that this is not my time to work out my anger. But this, if I do go with the rod, it is for the specific purpose of chasing away an exorbitant amount of foolishness. Now, what is God's plan? Because we can't just look at, you know, one size fits all spanking kind of mentality or punishment mentality. We have to build the child. That's what we're doing. We're building a human being, right? The woman spends 9 months actually putting the child together. You spend the rest of their life helping them grow. All right. So Proverbs 13, verse 1. Proverbs 13, 1. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. Now, there's an obvious lesson here, but there's another small one hidden in there. And that's a wise son heareth what? His father's instruction, which means father should be instructing. The very first form of discipline we want to perform is formative discipline, educational discipline, where I show you how to do something. Where I teach you the mental approach to why we don't do things. One of the things I'll do with our kids is our conversation. I've learned to do this in the form of the conversation of, is this right? And they'll sit there and they'll come up with an answer, yes or no. And then I'll ask this question, why? And I'll expect them to answer me. Now, the answer isn't for me to run them through a verbal obstacle course so I can later sit there and hang them for it. The purpose is for me to see, do you understand why we don't do this? And it has surprised me how often I have assumed that they should know whether something is right or wrong versus them actually knowing why. Right? Now, there was a debate that I saw between a couple family members. There was a post from Andy. It was about a show from Andy Griffith, and forgive me, I'm stuttering over this, but there was a thing from Andy Griffith where Andy's talking about Opie and how he wouldn't let Opie just make his own decisions on certain things. And he says, I as a dad am here and I make the decisions because if not, he'll reach out for the first shiniest thing out there. And it was a very good sentiment. It was very wonderful, but they were debating this thing that they saw back and forth. One sat there and said, yes, I'm there. I make the decisions for my kid up to a certain point. And then the other person came in and said, well, at what point do you allow them to make their own decisions? And they were kind of going back and forth because both of them were very black and white on the issue. And what they didn't realize is that you've got to do a little bit of both. Right? At a particular point, I control Melody's world, right? I tell her what room she can go into. I put in barriers. I block things off. Everything. Why? Because it'll go into her mouth as fast as lightning, right? If it's left out, fast as lightning. I control that world. Now, in a little bit, she's going to learn how to walk. We're going to widen that span out. And as she develops the ability to not put things in her mouth, there'll be more trust, right? But I can't sit down with her the way I can sit down with Caspian or Xander, and we can have a full-fledged conversation about things. Right? Now, why don't we do this? What's the purpose of this? And I'll hear them say something like, well, Dad, if I do that, number one, it's going to dishonor God. But number two, this is how this could potentially hurt me, and I don't want to do that. Perfect. Now I know that that door has been opened, and we can begin practicing certain things. The house is the place where we practice things in a way where I can control and limit the consequences, right? So we'll play board games, and I'll set up scenarios in the board game to see how they react. And if I know that we're struggling in an area, I can create something in the house where we can learn from that. Otherwise, I'm teaching them things, and I'm repeating myself over and over, and I toss them out into the adult world, and they haven't had practice, and they've just got dad's words in their ears. You understand how that's troublesome. What we need is we need both the words and the practice. Now, I can't prepare them for everything. Those of you that raised your kids and you saw them go out into the world and you saw the things that they went through, you could sit there and say, brother, there's no way in 1,000 years I could have helped them prepare for what happened to their lives once they get out there. We're not going to be able to prepare them for everything. But there's a lot that we can prepare them for, and it's good to partner that preparation with practice. And again, with demonstration of wisdom, we apply trust. All right, because you've done this, I trust you. All right, we'll get into those moments where, particularly with Xander, he's at that age where he's forming certain connections. So he'll sit there and I'll ask him a question. He'll think that he's in trouble, and he'll want to sit there and he'll, whoa, but I didn't do this. I didn't. Well, I trust you. You've demonstrated that you know better. I trust you in this. Why don't you tell me what happened instead of what you're afraid I think? We can have that conversation. Now, what happens if that trust is abused? We roll it back. We reapply some teaching. And once that wisdom is being shown again, we put that back in there. But what we don't do is we don't just rely on them to figure it out on their own. And we don't set them up for failure in a way to where either you do this right or I hit you. Or you do this wrong and I hit you. We must also teach them the whys, right? What do we have in Scripture? The Old Testament teaches us the law first, teaches us why the law, teaches us how the law. And then we see the punishment for not following it, right? There must first be the formation of understanding and then the application and the developing of wisdom. And then we can get to our next point, which is Proverbs 22:15, going back to it, the rod, the punishment. Much of today's humanistic philosophy says that it's wrong to spank children, but the Bible says it's necessary and right, provided the rod is applied to the right place. Never strike your child across the face, chest, back, etc. Apply the Board of Education, this says, to the seat of learning. And I'm sure many of you have heard that. And again, that goes down to, why am I doing this? A hit to the face is traumatic. A hit to the body is traumatic. It's something we want to avoid. I remember getting to a very uncomfortable age, still flinching every time mom raised her hand, because we got that smack to the back of the head. I had a fast-moving mouth and a slow-moving brain. So every now and then I got that jog to get them back into sync. So I was in my 20s, and I'm sitting there next to my mom at church. And she goes to raise her hand real quick to, I don't know if she was adjusting her glasses or to scratch. And you just saw me go, why? Guilty conscience, I guess. Learned behavior, I guess, right? So we want to avoid doing that sort of a thing, because that's a different kind of mark that we're leaving. What we want to do, and again, I love my mom. She's wonderful. I'm not putting her down. We're just using this as illustrations, and we'll be done here in a little bit. But again, there's a time and there's a place and there's a specific place for that kind of instruction. The rod should be applied in love. It should not be, get the belt! Because that's a different lesson we're teaching. We're not teaching the proper lesson, right? My conversations normally go, when we go down that avenue, like this. All right, so you did this, right? Yes. And you know what the punishment for doing that is, right? Because the punishments are almost always the same, right? No new thing under the sun. At a particular point, if Gideon did it, two others did it before him. So we've established this. You did this, right? Yep. What's the punishment for that? A spanking. So now what do I have to do? A spanking. All right, so you ready? Okay, spanking, and that's done. And after that, there should be a hug. There should be a rebuilding of the relationship. You don't just traumatize a child that way, because that's really what it is. When you spank them, you're shocking them, right? So there always should be the rebuilding of the relationship with an understanding of, all right, son, we messed up, and now this is what we're going to do better. In the adult realm, it'd be very much the same of, okay, now you got the ticket, and now you have to go to driving class again to work off some of these points. So it needs to be applied in love. Otherwise, what is it? It's abuse. All right, we want to make sure that what we're doing is productive and not just mean. It should be applied early in life. Xander's getting to the point in his age where I'm not going to do that. I specifically remember a time when my dad got angry, and at the age of 16 years old, he wanted to give my brother a spanking. I remember a specific time where at that same age of 16, my great-grandmother gave my brother a spanking. Oh, she was in her 80s, like late 80s, took this large, me-sized man across her knee and spanked him. He didn't feel it, but he didn't know what else to do. It was awkward watching, and I got a good thrill out of it later. I knew better than to laugh in the moment, but nobody in the room understood. Like, he didn't even get it. He was like, come here. And, but all the same, at a certain age, you stop doing that. Why? Because we're not working with a heart that's full of foolishness. Now we're working with a functioning brain, and we can do things differently, right? We have to handle rebellion differently. Again, to spark that anger, to create that frustration in a younger mind isn't going to do what it's going to do in a more mature mind. All right, and then after that, there should be, again, like I said, be the relationship building. Now, again, spanking is not the only punishment that we should use. There should be more than just that. Again, we can allow punitive discipline to back up formative discipline. Just giving an illustration, because my kids are the only ones I've got, I had the boys take some things from the fellowship hall to the office. And one of them did splendidly. Two of them threw everything on the floor. So what do we do? Well, that's simple. Did you do this? Yes. Do you understand why that's wrong? Yeah, it's messy. Good. Now go fix it. And also, we're going to have some more chores to do. Right, what are we doing? We're taking a principle, we're teaching a principle, we're cementing a principle, right? Because you did it wrong, what's the punishment? You have to redo it again, and now we're going to practice some more. That's part of it. Now, what if I go in there and I find that instead of it being all over the floor, we chucked it through the window? That's a spanking. We're not even talking about that. That's a spanking. So it has to fit, but it also has to build the child back up. It can't just be for the sake of getting justice. Parents, We don't obtain justice from our kids. Your job as a teacher, your job as a builder, your job as a maker. You don't exact justice from your kids. Everything we do is about building them. There have been many moments where I've come across, especially with Xander now, where a spanking will not work. A spanking will not fit what we're looking for, but a punishment will. I think that still kind of fits into what it says about the rod, the correction. There should be some correction there. But it doesn't always necessarily have to be physical hitting. It could be on the other side of a corrective thing. All right, because you did this, we're not doing that. And that's one of the worst things you could do. I remember, hey, if we get up early and we go, we're going to get this reward. And everybody did well, except for one person. So you said to say, well, we didn't cross the finish line together, so nobody gets the reward. Oh, I know, I'm bummed too. I was looking forward to it, but this was it. Now here's the punishment. Oh, and that's part of it. Again, we're building. What we do ought to build as opposed to tear down. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, as we look very briefly.